It's blazing hot outside. You get in your car to turn on the AC to get cold air pumping, but it blows hot air out. This issue is commonly caused by low refrigerant due to leaks in the AC system. You want an easy, all-in-one solution that will restore the cold air in no time. AC Pro Recharge Kits make restoring cold air easy for even those with zero DIY experience in less than 10 minutes. Save time and money versus going to a shop by picking up an AC Pro Recharge Kit today. Be a pro with AC Pro. Backstage with the golden grace. Tales from the stands to the batter's cage. The kind of stories that'll keep you engaged.
Backstage with the golden grace. Hi, everybody, and welcome to Phillies Backstage. Tom Burgoyne, joined by my buddy John Brazier. And John, I'm going to bring her right on because it's a big day. I want to be the first one to wish Kate Scott, the play-by-play voice of the Sixers, happy National Women's Day.
Women in sports day.
I get confused by it as well. But thank you. It's great to be on with you guys.
Yeah. Yes, and you are following Howard Eskin, just to let you know.
So one ray of sunshine to another, right?
Exactly right.
Howard wasn't too miserable when we had him on.
He's talking about Charles Barkley, talking about, talking about all the celebrities he's hanging out with.
Yeah. Well, you're not going to get that from me. I don't know nearly as many celebrities as Howard, but it is great to be on with you.
Yeah, thanks for coming. I know you're busy, and actually, are you doing anything for National Women in Sports Day?
I'm calling a Sixers game
calling
tonight.
She's working.
Was it shoot around this morning and popped over? For folks who don't know where you guys, I don't know if you always record this here.
Sometimes.
But
most times.
We are in the Phillies radio broadcast booth, so I'm looking down at home plate in a gorgeously empty. I love empty ballparks and arenas, right? The calm before the storm.
Yep.
At Citizens Bank Park. And John and I were just talking when he came down to get me outside that it doesn't feel like a winter day in Philly. It's sunny and gorgeous. So
when we interviewed Howard Eskin, the field was covered in snow.
Raining and
raining, miserable.
Not that had any relation to the guest. No. Just kidding, Howard. Just kidding. But yeah, so shoot around this morning. Now popped over here to spend a lovely hour or whatever with you guys. And then
and a big game tonight,
Sixers
too.
Warriors tonight, side by side, as we call them in the broadcast world. So ESPN picked it up, and we're doing it as well. So we're broadcasting side by side, as it were.
Can I ask a stupid question, too? Sorry.
No stupid questions. Bring them on.
This could be a really stupid question.
I'll try to give a stupid answer to
that. Where's Steph as far as, is he? Mm. I know he's towards the end of his career.
Yeah,
but
he's getting up there.
But you don't think this could be, this couldn't be it, right?
This wouldn't be the last time he's playing in Philly. Steph dropped 37 last week.
He's unbelievable.
And we'll probably get to this, but, the cool thing for me, now being old, is I worked for the Warriors and 49ers in San Francisco Giants radio flagship, and I got hired there the second year of Stephen Curry's career with the Warriors. And I got hired here second year of our young Tyrese Maxey's career with the Sixers. And I don't say it on air, and I'm not going to say too much right now because I don't want to put too much pressure on him, but I see so many similarities between just the humans that they are. I'm not saying that Tyrese is going to be the best shooter of all time, but the joy. Tyrese loves playing the game. And you guys know, there's some guys who like getting the checks that they get from playing baseball. And then there's guys who just couldn't live without the sport. Tyrese is one of those. He plays with such joy. He understands the platform that he has. We see him taking advantage of it already with the turkey drives and stuff. So I know he's questionable tonight with illness, so who knows what's going to happen this evening.
We had him on our broadcast. Now, Kate, we do a broadcast in the stands.
Yep.
Once a year. So, yes, we do it all over the ballpark. Tom McGinnis caught a home run ball, right?
That's impressive.
We were out in left field, and Tyrese Maxey went in there. And I'm telling you, of all the celebrities that we've had brought in there, that's the one we needed the most security because everyone was super excited.
The crowd went nuts. And for good reason. Just like you said, Kate, I think the fans really pick up on the fact that he loves doing what he's doing.
And they're drawn to him, right? And it was the same thing with Steph. And we kind of figured it was something about the fact that as opposed to a Joel Embiid or a LeBron James, who you see these incredible specimens, and you think to yourself, I mean, that's a superhero. Steph is 6'3", Tyrese about the same. They're more palatable. You can kind of think, if this was my best day, I could maybe do what he's doing.
Yeah, like with the Phillies, Larry Boa was our shortstop. And I think a lot of people could relate to him because he wasn't the biggest and brawniest guy.
I got Larry's autograph when I was a little girl.
Did you?
Going to see a game at Candlestick because I was obsessed as a young girl with all sports and was that person who watched SportsCenter on repeat, the half-hour episodes. So I even knew, like, the first and third base coaches for the opposing teams, and I would get their old baseball cards, and we'd only go to one, two games a year. That's all we could afford. But I remember, Larry, Mr. Boa, would you come over here, please? I always tried to say Mr. and be nice, right? But it was me and a bunch of little boys. Right. He's like, who's the little girl yelling at me? He was so kind, came over, signed my card. So
you know he never played high school baseball?
Stop it.
Hank Aaron never played high school baseball either. Yes. Probably different cases. Larry Boa did not play, didn't make his high school team.
Wow.
Played Legion or whatever he did, you know, when you're not playing school ball. And he went to a college and he ended up playing. Someone got the attention of somebody. And we sent a scout out to see a doubleheader of Larry. He got kicked out of the first game. I think he got kicked out of the second game. And when the scout came back and said, how was that Boa kid? Well, I don't know. What do you mean you don't know? I didn't see him. Well, didn't you go out there to go scout him? He's like, he got kicked out of both games.
Yeah, he got kicked out of the games. No surprise
what
there.
What not to do when a scout comes to watch you.
Okay, you've already talked about a little bit then. So I'm fascinated by a young Kate Scott. I mean, obviously love sports, huh?
Yeah,
so,
and, obsessed.
You know, and reading a little bit more about, you know, your bio, heavy with your announcing on basketball, football, soccer. I didn't see too much baseball, but when you were a kid, did you love playing all the sports?
I played all the sports, and I loved baseball growing up. I think, I don't know if it's a safe space. It's been a number of years now. It's been almost a decade, but I was born and raised a San Francisco Giants fan. Will Clark was my guy. I dressed up as Will, or at least what I thought was Will, you know, with eye black under my eyes and the hat pulled low in the lefty stands from like ages 5 to 9 or something. I still remember crying when the Giants decided to keep Robbie Thompson and let Will walk. Oh. I was like, how can you do this to me? That was the first time my dad had to sit me down and say, so, sweetie, this is a business. They're professional sports. They don't really care.
Is that the last time you cried?
It was actually the last time I cried. Yeah.
I cried when we traded Glenn Wilson, but I was in college.
Will Clark almost made me cry because we were playing, I think he was playing with the Orioles, and we had Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Oh, my gosh.
Taking batting practice.
Stone Cold.
Terry Francona was supposed to throw to Stone Cold. And Terry Francona said, Brazier, I got a couple meetings. Can you just start to throw to him, and then I'll come out in 15 minutes? Well, next thing you know, it's WWE camera that's filming it.
Oh,
the Orioles start coming out. Our guys start coming out. I'm in my khakis and golf shirt, whatever, and I'm throwing. Will Clark says, hey, buddy, why don't you throw it a little harder? And I'm looking at him like, come on, man.
That sounds like Will.
And you cried?
Well, I tried to throw as hard as I could, and I think I lost a grip on the ball, and it went right at Stone Cold. Like, he had to gave him a little chin music, and Stone Cold ran at me with a bat in his hand, and I ran out to the right field, like,
oh my
crying
gosh.
Like a baby.
Television
like
gold.
Baby.
That was TV gold. But yeah, I played all the sports. I grew up in a great street, Central California, so I didn't grow up in the Bay Area. A lot of folks think I did. But small town USA, I'm sure a lot of people in Pennsylvania could relate. Ton of kids on my street. I had a basketball hoop. We had bases spray painted in the street because there were so many kids again. So you got home from school, you threw your stuff inside, you had a quick snack, and then you ran outside and you asked, it was mostly boys and me, what are we playing? Are we playing hoop? Are we playing baseball? We had street hockey stuff. I remember we all coordinated one Christmas. Okay, you ask for a net. I'm going to ask for sticks. You get some pucks. So yeah, I was just obsessed with everything. And then once I started to be able to play organized sports, which actually wasn't till later because I'm 40, so it wasn't, hey, you're 7. You look like you could have a future in this. Let's get you into all the travel sports.
Did you play high school sports?
So I played 4 high school sports. Starting my freshman year, I was varsity tennis, basketball, soccer, and track and field.
Wow.
So I thought that I was going to go to college on a soccer scholarship. Soccer was my travel sport. And then, like something that's going on right now with the Sixers, I tore my meniscus playing soccer, my lateral meniscus in my right knee my junior year. And that obviously is a really important time for recruiting.
Yep.
But it was a great, it was I know athletes say this after they retire from professional sports, but it was the first death of a dream that I had to deal with at 16 because I thought, okay, I'm going to go to college. I'm going to get a soccer scholarship, play 4 years. I'm going to catch the attention of the U.S. women's national team because there was no women's pro leagues when I was little. So it was, I'm going to play for the U.S. women's national team. I'm going to win a World Cup. I'm going to win a gold medal. Like, that's going to be my career. Then all of a sudden at 16, that was gone. But in retrospect, blessing in disguise, because for the first time in my life, I was able to pause and say, okay, I'm actually burnt out on soccer. I've been doing every sport, every minute of every day. What else do I love? And thankfully, I had good advisors in high school, and one of them said, Kate, I just want to point out to you, you're on the microphone at our men's soccer games when you're not playing. You're
in high school?
In high school. Right. You do the morning announcements. Everybody please rise for the patriotic selection. You're on the microphone leading cheers at our Friday night football games, which wasn't something a woman had done before. You know, doing Clovis spellouts and stuff. And then senior year, I finally had time, and I started writing for the school newspaper and started writing sports, and I fell in love with it. And Mr. Schmalzel said, why don't you think about going to college and looking into sports journalism? Mm. And that was the first time truly that I'd thought about it, because it was 2001 and there was very few women who I knew doing this because there was no social media. So unless they were on ESPN, which there was a few, or they were Bonnie Bernstein, you know, sideline reporting for CBS, or Leslie Visser or Andrew Kamer, there was less than 10 women. So I never saw myself
doing
this.
And at that point, really none in play-by-play.
No,
certainly
none.
Anchoring and sideline,
exactly.
But play-by-play.
Yeah.
Eventually.
Yeah. And they were, I mean, I'll be honest, they were beautiful. They were so polished. And I was this ragtag little tomboy. So even if I would have thought, I just didn't see myself in those women because they were so different than me. So I just thought, I'm going to be a teacher. My mom's a special education teacher. I want to impact the next generation. But then thanks to Mr. Schmalzel, I went to Cal, UC Berkeley, thinking, okay, maybe I'll look into this journalism thing and see where that goes.
And then you were on, I was reading somewhere, the Mike Squad, was it at Berkeley?
Yep. So they were called Yell Leaders before me, but then all of a sudden this chick walks in who wants to do something that had only been guys. They were the mic men, so the microphone men who led cheers at the football games and basketball games. So I went to a Cal football game and it was exactly what I was doing at my high school, right? Leading cheers, lead a Cal spell out, defense, Bears, defense. But you had to understand the sport of football.
Yeah.
So apparently.
And that wasn't a band game, though. Remember, wasn't Cal involved in the band game?
That was November 1982. And the band is on the field.
I mean,
he's into the end zone.
So, you know, you grew up in that area. Did you always wanted to go to Cal, or was that the dream?
No, I didn't know where I wanted to go, actually. And then I was in leadership in high school, whatever that means. But and freshman year, our advisor actually grew up in the Berkeley area. So we took one of our road trips, our little leadership class of 30 kids, the freshman and sophomore and junior class president and all those things, and we went to Berkeley.
How far away is
3 hours.
Berkeley?
Yeah, I grew up Fresno Clovis, which is where Fresno State is, which is about right in the middle of the state, 5 hours north of L.A., 3 hours south of the Bay Area. Okay. And I remember going to Berkeley, and again, I grew up small town. A lot of us look the same, a lot of churches, a lot of religion, and all of a sudden I step out of this van in Berkeley, and there's tie-dye, and there's music, and I remember thinking to myself, I have no idea what this is, but this is awesome.
Pretty cool.
And I want to be a part of this.
Tom and I are both music fans. They have one of the best music venues, the Greek Theater.
Yes, sir.
I saw a band called the String Cheese Incident at the Greek Theater.
They still perform there.
One of the best concerts I've ever seen.
Yeah. No, some of the best acoustics. That was actually built into the hill. I'm sure you probably know the story.
Yep.
But just before it was built, somebody was standing there probably 100 years ago and just started talking and said, wow, the acoustics in this spot. So if you ever get out to California and see a concert, screw LA's Greek Theater. That's not a great viewing experience. But
Greek.
Berkeley, I actually saw Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers there a year or so before he passed, and Black Crows and lots of good concerts there. But anyway, what were we talking about?
And you're
guys
rolling, right? Sports journalism, you're cruising, and you're getting to do just a lot of reporting early on in your career, right?
Because that's all I thought that there was. I thought there was, as we just discussed, sideline reporting, maybe anchoring. So I wrote for a website that wrote about Cal. There was a magazine as well. I was doing the Yell Leading, so I was traveling with the football and basketball teams. So I was in it. I was an RA, because again, as my wife says, I'm a big nerd. For some reason, some people think I'm not. But yeah, so I was part of the rally committee with the Cal victory cannon up on the hill and the flags at football games. I was just immersing myself in as much of the sports and culture.
Awesome. That's a great experience.
Going to shows in Berkeley, going to shows in San Francisco.
I went to frat parties at Drexel.
I know.
I went to hoop games, but
I'm starting to think
it.
The same thing, right? I was in a secret drinking society. It's the only thing I was good at.
And then right after that, right after college, you joined Metro Networks, which that must have been a great gig. You got so much great experience.
So
there.
Much experience, yeah. So the one, so I'd started doing a little bit of TV as like the student reporter for the Cal Highlight Show before the Pac-12 Network existed. And everybody was telling me, you've got a great voice, Kate, and you know a lot about sports. And we can tell you don't care as much about the makeup. So maybe you should look into radio because that's where knowledge and personality and stuff can really lead you to a break. So I did an internship on just an FM morning show right after I graduated. And I thought, this is so fun. Waking up at 3 a.m. was not fun, right. But this is fun. They just get to talk and give each other a hard time for 4 hours. And as soon as I finished that, because I was already done with school, I knew I had to figure out a way to keep my foot in the door. So I asked everybody at the station, what do you think the next step is? And they said, well, we have some overnight board ops who are the people who push the buttons, who keep the music going overnight. And they said, but we also, there's some openings at traffic right now. That's what we called it. So Metro Traffic. It was just the station. It was the organization that did the traffic reports on all the stations in the Bay. This was before Waze and Google and stuff where you could get traffic on your phone. This is where you tuned in every 10 minutes to that one station in your city to find out what was going on 676. Why are we not moving? And I interviewed and I was hired as a producer. And I came to find out years later that I was their test case. They'd never hired a young kid before. They'd never hired just an intern. But apparently I did well enough that they hired a number of interns after me. And a couple years after that, trained in the airplane as a backup airborne reporter and just was doing traffic on every station. Told them sports was what I wanted to do. So when the sports guys were off on Christmas and New Year's and all the days that nobody really wants to work, I was like, 5 a.m. on Christmas? Nice. Let's go. Can't wait go to talk about the bowl
games.
But
that's
games.
What you need to do. You have to, at that for age, sure. In that industry, you have to be willing to do everything.
Exactly.
Right?
So and I did. I just said yes to everything. My parents hated it, but they understood.
So you basically have covered almost all the sports. I know, and you're, I mean, literally you've done pretty much every sport. Mm-hmm. You did NHL, you've done basketball.
Yeah.
Is there one sport that you're kind of, or when you're learning, that you're more nervous about, maybe because you didn't play or maybe you didn't, did you have to study a little more?
Yeah, definitely, because I played basketball, and I think basketball and soccer are sports that are very similar regardless of the gender you're playing, right? Like, women may not play above the rim like guys do, but very similar sports. Same with soccer. Guys can head the ball further, and the game looks a little bit different, but they're the same. But there's a big difference, as you guys probably know, to watching a sport as a fan and then having to be the knowledgeable voice calling it to a lot of people who've probably played. So football and hockey, especially when I got thrown into that fire. But I grew up watching it as well, so I had a baseline. But then there is a difference where you have to study more. But I tell this to kids all the time. We're all born knowing exactly the same about sports, which is squat. Guys or girls, and we either learn through watching as a fan or studying, just like all the other subjects that we had to study in school, math and science and stuff. So you can learn a sport, maybe not to the exact degree as somebody who played it, but if you are willing to ask a lot of questions and immerse yourself in the culture and not be afraid to do or say silly things because you're trying to learn it, then I think you can.
Well, I think a lot of things too, and I don't know who to give initial credit to, but maybe Chris Berman, or even go back to Dandy Don and Howard Cosell.
Yeah.
That it's almost become, it's right now, it's almost, it's entertainment. What is it? Entertainment? Is it sports? Is it both? You know what I mean? Because you've got to be, you can't just be do the straight, you know, play-by-play and analyst. You got to bring some flair. You got to bring some color. You got to bring, have some fun.
Or else people are changing the channel.
Right.
And that's what Al and I say. I think he sums it up perfectly, especially when it comes to basketball, that we are the Broadway show of sports because it's indoors. You're rarely, if ever, canceled. It's going to be 2.5 hours overtime, a couple more minutes, but it doesn't add a huge chunk of time. People are in or out, and
And the entertainment, you know, I mean, really, the entertainment they have coming in and on and off the court, it really is a Broadway
show. Music during the game.
Yeah, for sure.
T-shirts being thrown at your face. You better pay attention during a timeout while I'm trying to highlight my stat sheet because there could be, you
know, and you're down there. I mean, you're pretty far, right?
We're up here in Philly.
But you're not too high. You're not up like we are.
Yeah, no. I mean, not calling a baseball, football, or hockey.
You're like in the middle of the court, I guess, at lower level.
Yeah. Right. It's not too bad. 20 rows up. Some arenas we are... I feel like I'm calling a hockey or football game, but that's when the experience comes.
So talk about the transition into doing play-by-play.
Yeah. Well, it was it was an interesting one because I'd worked so hard to get good at sideline reporting because, again, I thought that was my ceiling. And finally got a couple of people to pass my tapes along to some folks at the national networks, ESPN and CBS. And all the talent people there said, this is good. Have you ever considered play-by-play? Truly, three or four different people who I'd never met, all of them said that. My thought was, crap, are you serious? Like, I've worked so hard to get here. Yeah. I feel like they're all telling me something. If I dive into this, it's going to pause my career for a few years because I'm going to have to learn a new skill and then get proficient at it before I'm able to get good at it. Do I want to do this? And I'm so glad that I made that decision, that the answer was yes. Because as they said, you have a great voice. We can tell you really know all of these sports. And this is kind of the final frontier, we think, for women in sports broadcasting. But we're just missing an entire generation because there was Gail Sirens who called the first NFL game and then Beth Mowins and Pam Ward and stuff. But then this huge break. And I thought to myself, well, I do. My favorite thing is being as close to the action as possible. So anchoring's great. I love all my friends who do it, but you're in a studio. You're removed from the game. Love sideline reporting, but you do all this work, and then maybe you're on for two or 3 minutes. Whereas you could be the voice of an entire game, maybe the voice of someone's career-high 70 points or a country's moment at a World Cup. And I just thought, okay, yeah, let's dive
into
this.
And you can bring your personality into it as opposed to the short – quick spin,
exactly. So. Yeah. So, and thankfully, one of the many people I worked with when I was at Cal got hired to produce a high school football package in the Bay Area. So 13 high school football games. There was an A game, which was live on Friday night. And then he asked me to call the B games, which were live to tape. So we would tape them on Friday night, just like it was live, but then cut it down to 90 minutes or whatever and air the next night. And he asked me to do it. And I cussed at him and said, you're crazy. I've never done this before. And he said, yeah, I know, but this is where everybody starts. Yeah. All the guys I'm hiring right now suck. They've never done this before either. Come out, call a game. If you hate it, you never have to do it again. I'll hire somebody else to call next week.
How'd you feel that very first night?
I was terrified.
Yeah, terrified, right. And then listening to the tape after the game.
It's so bad.
Is it though? John, listen, Kate is unbelievable.
How bad could it be? But I think
I was terrified.
You're your biggest critic.
I still am. Yeah. It's so funny when people, you know, ask about the comments and the haters. I'm like, I am relentlessly self-critical. I don't think you get to be here if you're not. So what you say, okay, but how I feel about the way I called that. But there was one deep shot in the game that I got correct. I knew the wideout who was running down the field, and I was like, Houston drops back. He's got a man. He connects. And this, you know. And in that moment, I felt the rush that I used to feel playing sports.
Yeah.
And I thought, okay. As a whole, this broadcast has probably sucked pretty bad, but that play, if I can do that more and more and more and get reps.
And you just said that naturally. You're not thinking of ahead of time before the game. If someone catches a long pass, I'm saying,
how am I going to call it?
If you do that, similar to being an athlete, if you're thinking, you're going to be too late. You just have to react. You have to call what you see. And some days the brainwaves are working a little bit faster than others. But so that play really showed me, okay, that was good. You nailed it. Maybe your voice didn't sound exactly like you wanted it to. We'll work on all those little intricacies, but that was awesome. So if I can find a way to get better at this and make money at this, I would love to make this my career.
Yeah. And then, you know, well, I love it, Kate, you know, first to do play-by-play for an NFL game on the radio, right?
Yeah.
And how did that opportunity come about?
Because the Niners are crazy.
Well, they must have, you know, taken the Bay Area by storm.
Yeah, well, and I joked that I had to leave because I'd worked for truly every team in every station. But it's really fun because so many of them are rooting me on and paying attention to the Sixers. We're their East Coast team now. They're saying that they're cheering for the Warriors. So tonight will be a fun one for them, but also cheering for the Sixers. But, yeah, so I was working, as I mentioned, for the 49ers and Warriors and Giants radio flagship station. I was their sports update anchor on two shows, so from 5 a.m. to noon. So I do the morning show with Murph and Mac and the 9 to noon show with Gary and Larry. That one was simulcast on television. So I got a ton of exposure from those things and had a blast, and the guys truly let me have an open mic. I was like a third wheel. So when they were saying something that I thought was stupid, I would chime in and tell them that I thought they were stupid. And so they always would talk about what else I was doing. So you did, how was the De La Salle call you had last night, Kate? And then I started reporting for the earthquakes and was doing all these things. So it was 2016, the Rio Olympics, and Ted Robinson, who's a national voice, I think a lot of people probably know, but Ted was the radio play-by-play of the 49ers at that time. He went down to call diving at the Rio Olympics, so Bob Fitzgerald, who's the voice of the Golden State Warriors, would do radio during the preseason because those are the only NFL games you get on TV locally, right?
Yep.
So, but because Ted was gone, they popped Bob up to television, and they had an opening on radio. And come on, it's preseason football night. There's the one job you don't want to do is radio preseason football. Here's 90 guys on each right. side, and the starters are probably not going to play
They're
at all.
Two number 88s or two number 97s.
But the 49ers had heard me for a number of years just yeah. working, and the fact that I was calling games, so called me into the program director's office one day, and Lee Hammer's his name. He's like, hey, Kate, the 49ers are on speakerphone. And Bob Lang, who's now back out here with yep. the Eagles. There's Love so many Bob. Philly, San Francisco ties. So Bob was on it, and Bob Sargent as well. And they were like, hey, Kate, we're big fans, and we just wondered if you might want to call the first two preseason games for us because Ted's going to be down in Rio. And I cussed. I said, you're full of S, guys. Is it April Fool's? And they said, no, we think you're great. We'd love to have you do it. So that was the first foray into it. And it was terrifying because I always put too much pressure on myself. Mm. Like you were saying, women haven't called things, so I know how big it is when I did get the opportunities, and I didn't want to suck and set our gender back 25 years. So I threw my everything into prepping yeah. for those games.
That's awesome. And then you did the Olympics game 2020,
yep.
right, in Tokyo.
Yep. yep.
And you were asked to do play-by-play for men's and women's basketball.
Yeah, yeah. For all the international teams. So the aforementioned Bob Fitzgerald did the U.S. men's and women's. And then they asked me to, and this was before the Sixers. This was kind of my audition for the Sixers that I didn't know because I interviewed right. before literally the day that I was flying out to Connecticut because we called them in little telephone booths in Stamford, Connecticut in the overnight hours because it was COVID. So none of
sure.
us went to Tokyo. But yeah, I was calling 2 to 3 games a night at 9 p.m. and midnight. And
that can't be easy either because you got Latvian names and Lithuanian
yeah.
names.
Oh, yeah. Tough, and right? men and women. And I was working right. with Fran Fischilla on the men's side and Monica McNutt on the women's side. It was, again, trial by fire. But it was one of those things, once I got through it, I thought it was another step that helped me build my confidence so that when the Sixers called, I thought, okay, let's do this.
Sixers called. Yeah, I love it. You know, it's funny to me, too, that it seems like a lot of groundbreaking, especially women in sports in particular, happened out in the West Coast. And then it kind of right. does, it does kind of make its way slowly to the East Coast here.
Yeah, well, I always knew that this was the center of the media world and yeah. the sports world. So earlier in my career, I made a point to come out here and just truly shake the hands and introduce myself of some executives at NBC Sports because a dream of mine was to call Olympics. And I knew our games are 8 o'clock on the West Coast. So yes, East Coast bias is real, but also people have to sleep out here.
Right.
So it wasn't that they weren't trying to watch me, but if they read my name, oh, Kate Scott calling 49ers games. Oh, Kate doing this for the Pac-12 network.
Yeah.
I knew that wouldn't have as much of an impact as them meeting me in person and saying, okay, I know who this is now. Now I'm going to pay attention.
I mean, you're such a great role model for, you know, I have a daughter who's 16 years old, and her school is great because they really kind of push the boundaries, and they make kids do things that they're uncomfortable doing, speaking in public,
yeah.
and other things, which I didn't have growing up. But what a great story. Your story itself is just as far as, you know, doing all the grunt work, accepting every challenge, you know, fearlessly,
yeah.
and then taking every assignment, knowing that maybe in your head you might not be, you know, perfect at it,
Mm-mm.
but you know what? You can't get perfect at it until you immerse yourself into it,
yeah.
right? And it's such a great message for girls, kids, anybody You know, sure. That's growing up trying to pursue any career,
because failure is such a big part of it. And that's why I always come back, since it's National Girls and Women in Sports Day, I always come back to playing sports and the things you learn playing sports, right? There's very few kids, man or woman, who are going to go pro in their sport, but how to deal with failure. Yep. If you're playing baseball, how many times are you striking out a game? If you're playing basketball, how many shots are you missing? Same with soccer. Yep. I missed that tackle.
How to be a good teammate. I
hate this chick, okay? But if we want to win this game, I've got to find a way to hit her with a through ball and so we can score. So dealing with all different personalities when it comes
to teamwork. Respecting authority, because you have coaches, and some coaches are the people that are patting you on the back. Some coaches are the ones screaming at you, and you have to deal with each one of them.
Yep. Yep. Right? Resiliency, when you roll an ankle, when you tear your meniscus, when stuff happens. So much of what I learned being an athlete, even though it was decades ago now, and even though I only played through high school, I'm so thankful for it, because it helped me in those moments where I was doing morning radio until noon and then driving 2 hours up to Sacramento and sleeping in my car and finding a Target bathroom that I could do my hair and makeup in and then doing sideline on a high school football game that night and then getting back home at 1 a.m. and I was feeling nauseous because I was so exhausted, but I still don't know if it was what I needed to do to get here, but I'm pretty convinced that it was. So I just told myself, just keep going, lean into all the things you learn playing sports, just one foot in front of the other. This is going to lead somewhere. Keep going.
All right, so let's take you to the moment. Okay. You get the call from the Sixers that they want you to be the first female play-by-play. What was going through your head, and what was your reaction?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure people have seen the reaction now. I'm not sure how much cussing we do on this broadcast. I tried to keep it to a minimum, but I truly didn't. I love the interview process. After the Olympics, they flew me out here for a day for a quick audition. Ala was sick, so Mark Jackson was awesome and filled in, and we kind of called a fake game together, did a fake open, which is that two-minute segment at the start of programs when we're on camera, and went out to lunch with everybody afterwards. So I had a feeling that I was making it close to the end, but I still just couldn't wrap my head around the fact that Philly would really have the guts to hire someone so different from from Mark Zumoff and just from the people that all of us have listened to and watched for all of our years, right? Every person that I watched growing up and listened to, all my favorite broadcasters are men. So I thought, okay, this is another amazing experience. Be really proud of yourself for making it as far as you have. And I was expecting the call to be, man, we loved meeting you. Your future's so bright. Best of luck. So I was truly, I think it's one of the few times in my life where I've been just shocked and blown away. And I was actually at an airport ready to fly because I was calling a college football package with Mike Golic Sr., former Philadelphia Eagle, that fall, which was another huge step in the right direction for my career. And I was boarding a flight to someplace in Oklahoma or Texas and truly like almost getting onto the plane, and my phone rings and I saw who it was, 215. And I thought, okay, here's the thanks but no thanks call. And then, they said, they usually call your agent and your agent is the one that calls you. But they said, we thought this was just a very special moment for all of us. So we wanted to call you personally and tell you that we would love for you to be the next voice of the Philadelphia 76ers.
And you had been out to Philadelphia, you had mentioned before, but how well did you know the market? How well did you know the history of the franchise?
Yeah.
I know you're a big Allen Iverson fan,
huge.
Right? So that's big. But were you familiar with the city at all?
Just a little bit. Interestingly, I feel like my career was kind of leading me here. So I called tons of stuff on the West Coast and in the Bay Area. And then the now defunct NBC Sports Network, NBCSN, right, which had hockey for a number of years. But they also covered some A-10 hoop. So after I flew out years ago just to shake hands with people at NBC in Stanford, didn't ask for a job, just truly wanted them to know who I was. So if they ever saw my name, they would be able to put a face to a name. And out of nowhere, they asked me to call a couple of A-10 women's games. And the first game I called was at St. Joe's. And then they asked me to call one at LaSalle. So I you know, when you fly to some place for the first time, it's really your hotel, the arena, the rental car place, and maybe you can walk around a little bit and try to get to know that area. But it's funny in retrospect looking back and saying, I feel like my career was kind of leading me here. But yeah, as far as what I knew about the place, I knew My really good friend, Kate Fagan, covered the Sixers for the Philadelphia Inquirer. So she was one of the first people I reached out to when the process started. And she said, Philly is such an underrated city, Kate. Like, everybody talks about New York and Chicago, but I think you would love Philly. I think you'd be a great fit. You have that blue-collarness that it does, kind of the chip on its shoulder. And the fact that everybody, not just sports fans, everybody cares about sports here. And that's what I always was, to a point of annoying some folks out in California who just wanted me to calm down. I mean, some Cal football players joked back in the day when they'd bat down a pass, come over to the sideline and be like, bro, why didn't you catch that? You could have intercepted. You could have had a pick six. So it felt like a really good fit to me. I knew it was going to be a huge hurdle for a lot of people who lived here to get over and understand that, but I feel more and more like people are seeing that I have a lot of the gritty and resiliency and blue-collarness that this city is about. And then when it comes to the Sixers, I mean, when you're growing up an NBA fan in the 80s like I was, even though they'd won their championships before, there's like five or six franchises, right? It's the Sixers, it's the Celtics. At that time, because of Michael and Scottie and stuff, there was the Bulls, the Lakers, and like, yeah, you know, throw in another one that was good that year. The Supersonics were good when I was growing up, but the Sixers were like the pinnacle when you think of a storied franchise in the NBA for me.
So then your first game with the Sixers, right? Obviously, yeah. You got butterflies.
Oh, my
even
gosh.
Even though you've done tons of things before, it's kind of brought you to this moment.
Yeah.
And what was that like? I mean, I assume you knew Allah a little bit, right?
Yeah.
But not tons, are there?
No, because we hadn't, again, we didn't audition together. I met him at Media Day, which was, you know, a couple weeks before. And we hit it off instantly. So that was wonderful. And I can't say enough about what a great partner he is, because you guys know. You can fake it. Once you get to this level, you're professional enough that you can fake it and make people think that you get along. But I think you can also really tell the people who
agreed.
Do
well, we're
get
sitting,
along.
We're sitting in the radio booth right now, and Scott Fransky and L.A. are perfect example of that.
Yeah.
They truly are great friends.
Great friends.
And it shows on the radio.
Yeah.
You can hear it easily.
And we're sitting in the Richie Ashburn radio
and
booth,
Harry
which, of course,
Richie.
Harry and Richie made a career of.
And now Tom Burgoyne and John Brazier.
Yeah, John
of course, we're in that same
pantheon. Yeah, but John's annoying, Kate. I got to tell you.
But see, that's how you know it's true friendship, when you can tease each other on the air, right? You can always tell if there's no real teasing. I don't know if they really
true.
Get along. But yeah, first game, I truly don't remember. It was such a blur, because in addition to it just being my first game here, there was so much of a media blitz because I'm a woman. So truly the whole first year is a blur. Like, all the jokes with me now, it was survive in advance that entire season for me, because I was doing multiple podcasts every week and interviews for TV stations. And when we'd go to other markets, those markets would want to interview me. Meanwhile, I'm just trying to adjust to the speed and physicality of NBA basketball and being a woman and have everybody hate me. So there was a lot going on that first year.
Did you pay attention to social media, or do you just kind of, some people just avoid all that?
Yeah.
And some people.
Well, and it's so
saying.
Hard because I'm not on the X or the Twitter or whatever it's called anymore. But I loved using it because, as I was telling you guys, like getting autographs as a kid, to cut out the middleman. And I knew that having the woman on the radio in San Francisco, or the woman calling my games, or now the play-by-play announcer of the Sixers, I knew if I was just some kid or fan, and all of a sudden that person responded to what I said, that built a connection, and that could help me build, as I like to say, kind of my army of supporters behind me. And I also love explaining things, kind of taking people behind the scenes, but in able to respond to the good tweets, I had to also read the bad ones. So, yeah, I did see a lot of it, and you try to ignore as much of it as you can, but you still see it. But it is, I mean, night and day from that first game to now. And again, I'm on it a lot less now because I don't need to be as much anymore. And my focus this year three, is, okay, now let's get as great as we can at this, so that hopefully in the next 3 to 5 years, I'm considered one of the better voices in the NBA. That's my next goal. So we'll see.
And I love the creativity, like the Bang Bang Niang, right? You came up with that one, right?
How did nobody say that before?
Yeah.
That was my question. How did nobody in college at Iowa State drop a Bang
Zumoff,
Bang George Niang?
You know, had certainly his tagline.
Coming in for a landing,
yep,
right?
Garbage to goals.
Turning garbage into goals.
Yep. Locking all windows
but
and
you,
doors.
But you, I think, done it very – it's not forced, Kate. And I think people, after Mark kind of had groomed our fans to kind of have – you know, with certain sayings, I think your own sayings just fit perfectly.
Wow.
Boom, boom, batoom.
We're not sure about that one, and Nico hasn't played that much. But, yeah, fans were itching for that one, so we dropped a couple of boom, boom, Nico batooms.
Can you talk to Coach and say, hey, can you put him in a little more? I need to get his name out.
Can all the guys be in there a little bit more right now? Holy cats.
You mentioned the travel. I mean, this is the middle of your season, literally. And how's that? You've been grown accustomed to the travel and
but it's
the craziness.
It's exhausting.
I
we just got back from our West Coast road trip, and we were in five different states for five games in 8 days. Yeah. And there was a back-to-back between Portland and Golden State, and we were in three different time zones. We started in the East, then went to the – so it is as incredible as possible, right? We travel on a charter. We stay in really nice hotels. There's food at the hotels and the team meal room. But you're still a human getting into cities at 3 a.m. And then having to wake up and prep as hard as you can for the game that night. And as opposed to baseball, the team changes every day. So there's a lot more prep than, it was a late night here at the ballpark, but I get the same guys tomorrow. May have a different pitcher, maybe a different guy in left field, but same team.
How will you use your All-Star break? Because that's coming up. You can just rest for 72
rest
hours.
Rest and relaxation, yes. Uh-huh. This is when you make it up to your spouse that you've been traveling incessantly for the last 4 months. So, we're going to get away for a few days and just kind of relax and detach.
And what's Nick Nurse, we had Nick here. Nick threw out the first pitch.
I know.
Did a great job.
Did a little of the Kimbrel, right?
He said, can I do this? I'm like, do whatever you want, Nick.
It was
Nick.
So great.
And it's great because he coached basketball in Manchester, England, and I coached lacrosse in Manchester, England.
You did?
Right. So we talked about, you know, some of the towns, and we talked about just how the fans over there or the people over there, the different cultures. And when they say unlucky, you probably saw Ted Lasso. When they say unlucky, if you make a bad mistake, they say unlucky. Well, it's not unlucky. It's a bad pass.
Screwed up.
It's almost like a passive-aggressive kind of unlucky.
Ooh, a bit too heavy on the touch. No, that was actually just a really
just
bad dribble.
Really bad, right. Exactly right. But also, what is your relationship with Nick, and what's your relationship with some of the players, Joel, and you talked about Tyrese before.
Yeah, well, start with Nick. I think we're so lucky to have him here in Philly. He was the guy that I was hoping Daryl and Elton and company would go out and get, because he was the guy who frustrated Joel Embiid the most in the postseason and in the years before he got here. And he wrote a book called Rapture after the Raptors, unfortunately. Made it past the Sixers a number of years ago to win that NBA championship. And I have told him personally that there's, even though we're obviously very different people, there's so many parallels, because he had to grind his tail off to get here. As you mentioned, like, basketball in England is not the thing. It is soccer, and that's it. So he was in the BBL for years. And then when he came over here, he had to work in the D League, now G League, for years. And then he was an assistant coach in Toronto. So he coached 30 years before he got his first head coaching opportunity. And it was because Dwayne Casey got fired in Toronto and they decided, well, it's this time of the season, you're kind of running the offense, you do it. But don't screw it up, or this will probably be your last chance at being a head coach. So he has that blue-collar mentality. Yep. He's extremely grateful. He never stops working. And so I'm really happy that he's here. He treats all of us top to bottom as important members of the staff, which is really cool. And then when it comes to the players, you never know what you're going to get. You know, I've covered, as we've talked about, pretty much every sport at every level at this point, and there's prima donnas and jerks at every level, high school all the way up through pros, and you're thinking to yourself, you're 15, but so I wasn't sure what kind of team I was walking into, and the guys have been awesome to me, treated me like a broadcaster who just happens to be a woman from day one. The respect that they have shown me, the friendship, the acceptance, just everything. So I definitely don't take that for granted, because I know that that's not the case at every team. So I'm very grateful that these are the guys I get to cover.
Well, you guys have a great organization. And as I'm sure you know, all the teams really work. Everyone always asks me, are you guys, you know, is Sixers, Flyers, Eagles your rivals? Yeah. No, we're all friends. We work together. Yeah. You know, Laura Price to, you know, to Tom McGinnis to Matt Cord. By the way, I'm going to break some news to you.
Uh-oh.
Oh, yeah. This is breaking.
Do we have like a sound effect
news.
Or something?
Breaking news.
Drum roll, please.
Yeah. So Matt told me today that he is married. Did you know that?
No, I didn't.
Just got married.
He told me he didn't tell you. He forgot he didn't see you.
Congratulations,
so
Matt Cord.
Matt Cord got married this weekend at his mom's house.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, so next time you see him.
I'll give him a big hug tonight.
Give him a big hug, right.
I hate married man.
And speaking of that, did you ever see the video of Steph Curry when Matt was doing his pregame introductions?
Right. Yeah,
Steph Curry was hanging right by the table.
And
he literally was staring at Matt, who's 1 foot away. Yeah. And Matt, you know, he emotes very much.
Oh, yeah.
He's getting up and down. He's doing this.
Yeah.
And they have it on video of Steph Curry just checking him out with this wry smile on his face. It's going, man, look at this guy.
That's awesome. I haven't seen that, so I'll have to see it. But again,
that's a good one.
Steph has fun every day. He knows how lucky he is to be here doing that. And same with our Tyrese Maxey.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Do you get a chance to come to many Phillies games when the season's over?
A couple.
Now she has.
And now I feel like I have a hookup.
Sure.
So
yeah, for
I look forward to hitting you guys up for it. But yeah, Al and I have come to a game together the last couple of summers.
Oh, good.
And then my first summer, my best friend flew out from California, and she's a huge baseball fan as well. So we took SEPTA down to the ballpark, and we ate our way through the nine innings. We literally were like, okay, let's just walk around and see everything. We got the sundae and the hat. We tried a bunch of different beers. We were having a good time. I was off the clock, Kate, that night.
Nice.
It was great.
You know what I see in the future, Tom?
Go ahead.
In the future,
uh-oh.
I'm seeing this vision of Kate Scott shooting hot dogs with a Fnatic.
Oh, I like that.
What do you think?
I am
shooting
in.
Hot
hey, we
got to
work you into
I am
the
in
show
the hot dog
sure.
gun. I'm really sad we don't have one of those over at the Wells Fargo Center. The t-shirt gun is decent.
It's very, the Gatling.
But the hot dog gun.
Yeah,
it's,
all right,
it's another
Kate,
level.
We got to work you into the show.
All right, and you do have two great contacts now. So
that's true.
At least one. I don't know which one's.
I just want to know how you guys got your titles, because to get to.
From avoiding work.
Well, but still, I mean, people get asked what kind of title they want often, but they there's usually not the follow through. Director of
Funny Games. Well, I gave my title to myself. That's the best way to do it.
yeah, that's true.
30 years ago, when I was at a radio show and I was doing radio hits, and they kept asking what my title is, and I had a boring muckety muck title. And I went back to my boss and said, "I need a new title. I'm going to these radio stations. These DJs wearing flip flops and Hawaiian shirts.
Yep.
I need something that, like, basically they'll stop asking me what my title is."
Mm-hmm.
So we came up with, it was either Vice President of Shenanigans, too much power up top, Shenanigans too long, can't spell it on a card, Manager Tomfoolery. I don't know if people know what Tomfoolery means. So we came up with Director of Funny Games, and it stuck.
That's such a good one.
And Tom.
Hey, you know, I made a title of being a friend, of a mascot.
Best friend.
Best friend.
So good.
Best friend.
I need both of your business cards.
we'll give it to you before you leave. But you also have a chance not only to have our business. Not only to have our business cards, Kate, but to get a Backstage Burgoyne and Brazier t-shirt.
Ooh.
As well as an autographed Philly Fnatic picture,
which
you can hang in the TV booth.
Okay. Is that a triple XL t-shirt of yours from 2007?
I know. Those giveaways. I mean, it's great to get a t-shirt on
those,
like, opening
night
of the Sixers, but they're always huge.
You open it, you're like, 77ers? What?
Well, we have a guy who sent me a bunch of t-shirts, and the good news, I'm really going low, and I've given out, most of our guests are pretty big, so
I'm an outlier.
You're perfect.
Okay.
So
okay,
all right, but
I'll
but you have to get six out of eight in order to qualify. All right,
what if you get one over.
Tom doesn't know this quiz, so you do have one lifeline if you want to use Tom as a lifeline.
I'm a terrible lifeline.
He's an absolute
I'm terrible at trivia. Like, I'm truly
It's about your life, though. It's about your life.
Yeah, you'll crush this.
Okay. He is an atrocious lifeline, but
thanks, John.
You can always use him.
Thanks for the visit. Let's get down to business. Now here's your chance to show how much you really know. He might get grumpy if he can't stump you with Brazier's Quiz.
All right, you mentioned you went to Clovis High School in Fresno County,
mm-hmm.
California. Which of these celebrities did not go to Clovis?
Oh.
So three went to Clovis.
Okay.
One did not. You got to tell me which one did not.
Okay.
All right. A, former Philly Johnny Estrada. B, singer Billie Eilish. C, former NFL quarterback Daryl LaMonica.
Yeah,
And D, former pro soccer player and Olympian Chad McCarty.
Oh, these are impressive. I wish she was an alum, but Billie Eilish, not a Clovis High Cougar like yours.
You are correct, and I picked Billie Eilish only because I was watching True Detective Night Country Do you, have you watched that?
It's on the to watch list. How is it? I've heard it's weird.
Very weird.
Heard it's really
yes,
weird.
It's basically like Twilight Zone meets the X-Files.
I'm in.
And Billie Eilish music probably is perfect for
it. It's Billie Eilish music. It sets is the very beginning.
Ooh, right.
And it's very dark and it fits. Yes, it fits that.
Yeah.
That
did she go to high school?
It's a really good question.
Do you know that both of her parents were in Hollywood? So
okay, yeah, that's
she might have gone to like performing arts.
She would just like hang out in her bedroom and just write songs with her brother, right? So
my daughter's gonna be very impressed that I even.
I know. I was gonna say you guys are taking the age average
we're
of
real
this podcast down.
Yeah. We'll
Stay
be talking about the Allman Brothers.
57 minutes
the show's
in,
over.
We've got a Billie Eilish breakdown.
he just mentioned string cheese.
I know, and I even said so. I'm gonna catch so much heat because I said the string cheese incident. It's string cheese incident. Gotcha. Sorry about that.
Okay, he didn't drop a fish or a dead.
Right, Kate's one for one.
But we are going to go see, Tom and I next weekend are going to go see Tedeschi Trucks Band with Little Feet.
Little Feet, who we love.
That'll Atlantic City.
Yeah. Right on.
All right, you were one for one.
Yes.
All right, you mentioned you went to University of California at Berkeley. Mm-hmm. Which of these celebs did not go to Berkeley?
Ooh, okay. That'd be a
this
lot.
Is, yeah, this
so
be
four, three went to Berkeley, one did not.
It's going to be hard.
All right, Brian Hugh Warner, who is Marilyn Manson. Natalie Coughlin, who's the multiple gold-winning Olympic swimmer.
Yeah.
Steve Wozniak, co-founder of Apple Inc.
Yeah.
And actor Gregory Peck.
Yeah, yeah.
So which one did not go to?
It is A, thankfully. Marilyn did not go to the University of California, Berkeley.
What's his real name?
Brian Hugh Warner.
Did you know his real name was?
I did not, and I'm happy that I did not.
All right. And that music could also be in Night Country.
But yeah, a lot of famous alums who went to Berkeley.
I had a lot to choose from.
Yeah.
Because we do this, I do this for most of the guests. And that's one of the ones, there was a lot. All right. In 2011, now this is going to go into your, you have to bring back your memory here. In 2011, you served as a TV sideline reporter for the San Jose Earthquakes in the MLS. Which one of these guys was not a member of that team? So three were a member of the team. Three were a member of this team. One was not. You might want to use, if you really don't know, this might be advisable to use Tom as your lifeline. All right. Chris Wondolowski.
Okay. Yeah.
Kari Stevenson.
Uh-huh.
Jorge Valandria.
Uh-huh.
Or Simon Dawkins. So Chris Wondolowski, Kari Stevenson.
No, it was C.
Jorge Valandia.
It was Jorge.
You got it.
That's our assistant general manager. So I don't think our assistant general manager was on the San Jose
Earthquakes. I don't think
Earthquakes.
So either. But, you know, you never know.
It's a soccer name.
It is.
Three for three.
Yes.
How about that? All right.
I need to just make it me trivia the next time I go to a bar and be like, hey, I know you guys had this whole thing planned. Could you just ask these questions?
Quiz no topic.
All right,
forget Seinfeld.
We didn't talk about this. But we mentioned a little bit, alluded to it. But on International Women's Day on March 8th, 2020, you were part of the first all-female broadcast crew for an NHL game.
Yeah.
It was the Blues versus Blackhawks, and the Blues won 2-0. Mm-hmm. Who scored one of the two goals? Okay, who scored one of the two goals?
Ooh.
Was it Ivan Barbashev? Was it Ryan O'Reilly? Was it Braden Schenn?
Assistant
or was it Alex Petrangelo?
Ooh, I think it was last two, but I know Schenn scored one because I'm still pissed about my goal call on his first because he had a rebound. I said no, and then there was another rebound. I said no, and then I said Schenn, and it was a bad angle, and I was so ready to drop the scores, which would have been awesome. And I couldn't tell if it went in, and they didn't light the lamp, and I was like, Schenn, the first goal of the day.
Too bad.
It was Braden Schenn. Sorry, Braden. C+ on that goal call.
That's funny.
Had a chance for an A+, but that's another. Kids, don't let fear keep you from doing what your
don't
gut's telling you to
that's
do.
Right.
Dive in.
And by the way, Tom knows this. I do play-by-play for one game in spring training on WBCB, one of our radio affiliates. So every year, someone gives me a line, or I'll come up with a line and do a totally over the top.
To get
so
there.
3 years ago, Rhys Hoskins hit the ball, hit a home run. And I said, it's going, and put that baby to bed without a diaper. So I took that from Will Ferrell, who did it on the Tampa Bay Lightning game.
That's awesome.
We burned those tapes after the game.
Yes, and then Ben Davis gave me one yesterday who said, call that ball an Uber because that ball is hammered.
Are we going to get an answer to the question?
Well, it's actually, I had Alex Petrangelo, but. Well, do you think Braden should? Maybe I'm wrong.
No, Petrangelo scored the second goal.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Then you're 4 for 4.
Yeah.
Yes.
Your first NBA game calling play by play took place October 20th, 2021.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
Who was the opponent?
No clue.
Who was the opponent?
Absolutely no idea. I told you I was blanked on it.
Well, then now you're going to have to do it. You have a 25% chance, right?
Okay.
But the good news is you're 4 for 4.
Yeah.
So was it the Brooklyn Nets, the New Orleans Pelicans, the Oklahoma City Thunder, or the New York Knicks? So the Nets, the Pelicans, the Thunder, or the Knicks?
I think it's one of the first two, Tom. Do you have any thoughts?
No thoughts.
Lifeline? Left line?
You are in the right track.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Now I'm going to say you have 50-50 chance.
I'm going to say it was the Nets.
Oh, it was the Pelicans.
Oh.
No. All right. I think right, you should be fine. All right.
Yeah.
Really
Six.
Want that oversized T-shirt.
You called some men's basketball games at the 2020 Summer Olympics.
Yeah.
Right? Which team won the silver medal that year?
Ooh.
Maybe you don't know. U.S. won the, you know, won
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
Who won the silver? Was it France?
It was France.
Yeah.
Australia won. Yep. Won bronze.
Yep. Yeah. There you go. All right. So now you just have to get one of the two.
Okay.
All right.
Here
you mentioned
go.
Earlier you worked with Mike Golic.
I did.
As the play-by-play voice
Mikey
for Learfield
G.
College Football Saturday, and that sounds awesome because you went to different.
Oh, we had so.
That's
much
a dream.
Fun.
She went to all these great college stations.
No, but
she went
and
to,
here's the best thing: the reason they hired us is because they wanted us to have fun. The whole tagline was Saturdays
Perfect.
Are supposed to be fun, and there's so we were College Football Saturday night because all the early games out here would end between 3 and 4, and then the West Coast games wouldn't start till 7. So there was always that like 4 to 6 p.m.
Right.
block on sports radio stations during college football season that were empty. So that was the void we filled.
Oh,
and truly, man. The producer, Tom Bowman, who was the one who hired us, I thought he was crazy as well. He said, I want you guys to have a blast.
In like, a college town.
Like, make it so that people who don't care at all about this Oklahoma State Texas Tech game in California stay in their car and want to listen to you.
Yeah.
So we'd be talking about fans. Mike is singing Sweet Caroline on the radio. And then we had 4 field rushes. It was just, we lucked into so many awesome
games. Does it amaze you how ESPN College Game Day has become a Goliath? I mean, it is unbelievable.
I mean, I remember waking up at 2 in the morning when Cal was at USC. Because I was there when Aaron Rodgers was the quarterback at Cal, and when they were good, Matt Leinart and Reggie Bush, that's when I was in college. And I remember we road tripped down to LA, and we woke up at our crappy hotel at 2 in the morning to go out there to get our signs to be behind it. And that was 20 years ago.
20 years ago. And so I Temple played Notre Dame football. And so they did want to, usually it's out in a rural, it's out in campus, but they did it right at Independence Hall, right in front of the Visitor Center, in the Visitor Center building, but then out on the lawn and in Philly. And they had the Fanatic there doing the picks, the predictions. And I was with the Fanatic, Kate, but telling you.
Friend of, right?
I think from all the things I've hung out, done stuff with the Fanatic all these years, I got more response from that. So many people. I'm like, I couldn't believe all the people who saw
that.
And this is a guy who's been on the Goldbergs. He's been on It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, that got more reaction than I think anything.
It's how everybody wakes up on Saturday morning across the nation.
I'm doing a college tour with my daughter this fall because she'll be a junior in high school.
Ooh.
That's
so
fun.
Of all those towns you went into, because I know you hit pretty much all the great ones.
Yeah, we got
what was your favorite college town?
Ooh.
Like the most fun. If you're going to go back to school and you have to go to one of those colleges, which would be the most
fun? That's
a
great question.
That is, and it's so hard because they're so different. They fit, you know, first of all, they're so hard to get to. Like Tuscaloosa, Alabama is in the middle of nowhere.
Right.
Athens, Georgia, middle of nowhere.
My son's a junior at Oklahoma. That's Norman. It's a half hour south of Oklahoma, but you're
and
still
kind of
in the
Stillwater. We went to Oak State when we were in Oklahoma. That's in the middle of nowhere. That was a pretty fun college town, though. And their cheese fries were pretty darn good. We went to a game at Colorado, which is a beautiful, and I know they got some run last year because Dion's coaching there at least for the moment. But Boulder, I don't know how far west she's considering schools, but
she's pretty much looking at south.
So
did you go to Knoxville?
We did make it to Knoxville, and we were at Ole Miss as well.
I went there last year for
Oxford
football game. I love Oxford. I might go to grad school if she goes there.
It's just so funny the difference between women dress up to go to games in the South.
Yeah,
and I still remember because Tennessee played Cal when I was in, and they were like, you girls look like crap because we were in jeans and like t-shirts.
Right. Yeah, they get all,
and all their girls are dressed up in checkered dresses.
Oh, but
and
you
stuff,
should see the sororities look like they're like these.
Oh, yeah. It's
like
the White House.
Huge. Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly. Right.
It was slightly different.
University
in Berkeley.
Of Georgia. That's a great
Athens,
campus.
Yeah.
We went there. So any of those you can't miss, right. Especially if she likes sports.
All right. Well, Mike Golick threw us off here. So you worked with Mike Golick.
Yes, sorry.
As a play-by-play voice for Learfield. Well, it's our fault. I ducked into it. For Learfield's college football Saturday night, besides football, what other sport did Mike play in college?
Oh.
Did you know that off the top of your head?
I should.
You can be the lifeline. You haven't been used yet.
Okay.
Was it lacrosse, basketball, wrestling, or track?
Oh, no, it was wrestling.
Wrestling.
Because we went by the college or some wrestling hall of fame, and Mike was like, you guys want to know something?
Little known fan.
He was a good wrestler. Yes, he was a really good wrestler.
Really good wrestler.
He was 24-4-1 in his career at Notre Dame. And his brother, Bob Golick, was phenomenal.
Yep.
Like, really good.
And as you guys know, sometimes good wrestlers, because of the leverage and the stuff you got to do with your hands, make really good
offensive linemen.
Golick was awesome.
Yeah, offensive lineman.
Yeah, that's what he was.
He was a defensive lineman, but offensive lineman. So Mikey G was on the other side.
I'm hoping
he's down in Phoenix right now. I'm hoping to get him onto the Sixers Suns broadcast in March. We'll see if that happens.
Fun. That'd be cool.
Yeah. Yeah. We're still buddies.
All right. You
Kate
qualified,
has qualified for the T-shirt.
But you have one last question.
Oh, bonus question.
Yeah, you're 7-8. It's a great score.
You're 76ers TV analyst, Ala Abdelnaby, who...
Double A.
Yeah,
big fun.
He's, you know, I've come around on Ala only because... for the mere reason he went to Duke, and I went to UVA. So
that's the main reason I don't like him, because I was one of the many kids who just hated
you're not
Duke
alone.
Growing up.
Yeah, you're not alone.
No. He's a great guy. You guys are the best. But
anyone
the
ACC, if you didn't go to Duke, you hate Duke.
Oh, yeah.
I went to Billy King's wedding and held my nose because it was every player that I hated in college that was there.
Oh.
All right, so Ala, what city was Ala born in?
He was born in Alexandria, Egypt.
You got it.
Mm-hmm.
You got it. Look at that. You went 7-8 right
there.
Listen,
I really love to get to know the people I work with, and I try to keep track of where I've been in the past. But, yeah, a lot of people point to me being, you know, one of the first women. Ala, the first Egyptian broadcaster in the NBA, and he had to grind to get here, too. He was calling games in Arabic in the Middle East and calling JV high school girls games. So he's a grinder, too.
Wow. Yeah. Look at that.
How about that?
Did Little you know that?
The first. I did not know
Everybody
that
who Egyptian. Waited an hour and 25 minutes into this podcast gets that Ala nugget.
Speaking of it, Kate, thanks. I know this is a busy day for you. You got the Sixers tonight.
Yeah,
thanks
if my call
for
sucks
over.
Tonight, I'm just going to blame you guys.
Well, you have an open invite to a Phillies game.
Yep. Yes.
We are going to find a time for you to get on that four-wheeler with a Fanatic and shoot hot dogs.
Give me a few more years, maybe, so folks know who I am. We'll give me a few more years of calling Sixers
they know
games.
Who you are.
They sure do. Thanks, Kate. You're doing a great job. Really appreciate you being here.
Thank you, guys. Thanks for having me.
All right, John, we're gonna sign off. Hey, everybody, thanks for tuning in again this week, and we'll see you next time on Phillies Backstage. Backstage with the Golden.